The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here is your host, Aldana Ambler.
Well, welcome everybody to The Growth Strategist. I am Aldana Ambler. And every week, for those of you who are new to the program, we kind of rotate through different growth strategies. And we're talking to the mid-market here. Most of our listeners are owners and presidents of privately held companies that are about $20 million and hoping to get to $200 million. We have a subgroup of people that are listening that own about $10 million companies, another subgroup that are the real small companies that are looking for what their journey is going to lead to them, and a fourth group of people that are in corporations like division heads and such. And I think you guys and gals are the ones thinking about what would it be like to be the $20 million company and maybe getting released from your corporate shackles. So, hi! For those of you who haven't listened to the program before, I've been in business for 34 years and have spun off a number of businesses myself, and kind of an award-winning entrepreneur too, like the guests. But mostly I'm in that position of coaching and helping the strategic plans of rapidly growing companies. And the journey that people go through is what's fascinating to me. So whether or not it's a geographic expansion or IPOs or franchising, that those are the techniques that you use. It's really continuing to make sure that we don't hit these plateaus and get stuck. And it's really about, you know, why are we in business and where's the energy going to come from? And we're in the business of continuing energy. Now, I was in an interview yesterday with a gentleman who, you know, he's in a small town. And in a small town, sometimes the expectations aren't real high. But this guy's really bright. And just listening to the journey of learning about, in his case, insurance, and then learning about how he could go after a target industry that other people weren't expecting, and then really nailing it. I mean, he owns it. It's just really exciting. And then learning about how he could sell the business and still stay in charge of the thing. And then learning about acquisitions. I mean, this guy is over a $40 million company. He's hot. He's hot. And the assignment is to really figure out, okay, now how is he going to become a CEO now that he's a division of a corporation? And, you know, he's 38, 39 years old. I mean, he's going to be hot for a long time. That's really exciting. So some of the guests that we have on this program, what we do instead of just having it only be about geographic expansion or only be about franchising is every once in a while you get one of these people who's been on the journey and gone through several steps. So it's a role model around the idea of continuous learning, that it isn't just, do you know how to do acquisitions and you perfect that and you do that again? It's not a game of Jeopardy to grow these companies. You know, if your answer is acquisitions, what was the question again? No, it's much more of a, can you tell what phase you're in your journey as an entrepreneur, your journey as an executive, and what phase is your business in? And, you know, just assume you're going to have to learn things that you've never done before. So today's guest is Terry Jones, and you must have heard the name. This is the founder of Travelocity. And Terry is, I love the history, BA in history in Denison University, and in 1970s, he began as a travel agent. I mean, what a hoot. And then somebody, but by the time he's an entrepreneur, his business was Sabre, and we'll deal with the details, but I just want you to hear the synopsis of it. He runs an organization called Sabre, which was part of an airline organization. Now think about what that might be like. So that he has the experience of being an entrepreneur. And when Travelocity started, it grew from like 20 people with one location and to a point where it had offices in 5 states, 6 countries, and 1,600 employees. So their volume was like $300 million in revenue and profits of $16 million. I mean, he's been on the journey I'm talking about. So today we're going to talk about what it's like to go from an entrepreneurial organization to private, to really growing it through strategic alliances and joint ventures. I mean, think about what they did with AOL and Yahoo. And then go through the IPO. I mean, a lot of people have resisted, you know, going public and going through all the stockholders, shareholders and all that stuff. He's been through that journey. Changing the executive team like 3 times across a 10-year period. And all the investments in technology, I mean, think about their database of 30 million names. Whoa! And the Travelocity, if you've forgotten, you know, were the people that did the seat maps and the flight paging and calendar-based shopping. This is an innovative business, and it starts at the top, folks. So without any further ado, I just want to introduce Terry Jones. You there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Well, hello. Now, I understand you're in Lake Tahoe, and you're sitting in some snow.
I am. It's we've got about 2.5 feet of snow here, and it's awful nice to be running a virtual business now where I can live in the mountains instead of in Dallas.
You know, but better you than me. I'm not a snow person.
Ah.
I grew up in western New York State, and I loved Rochester, but the snow, I drew a little map and said, all right, I'm living south of the snow line.
Well, I did that for the last 20 years, so it's a nice change.
Well, yeah, I'd like to go visit it, but no. As soon as you have to go anywhere, it's too inconvenient. Anyway, so I appreciate you taking the time. We're going to structure this around the journey, if you don't mind. So how did you get from, you know, the travel agency stuff, just a few minutes on, becoming that, you know, that entrepreneur over Sabre? Tell me how that happened.
Well, it's kind of a strange story in a way. As you mentioned, I began my career as a travel agent. I spent a year out of college traveling around the world, and that was the best postgraduate education I could have had. And when I came back, I wanted to stay in that business. So I was a travel agent for about 6 years, and travel agents were just starting to be computerized.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought an accounting computer for our company, really got interested in it, eventually jumped ship and went to work for that company, selling computers. And that company was purchased by American Airlines. So I moved over.
Oh, okay. So that's how that happens. All right.
And I was in American Sabre division, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
That's the division that automated travel agents with these reservation computers.
Okay.
So
you didn't come up as a techie, but you sure got into it quickly.
No, actually, I was in sales at this computer company and then moved. They had me running the technical group. Then I became president of that division.
Now, what did Sabre actually do?
Sabre took the old American Airlines reservation system and said, we should sell this to travel agents to automate our distribution capability.
Mm-hmm.
So a travel agent who had an American Airlines Sabre terminal could make reservations on any airline.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out to be a multi-billion dollar business for American. For a while, it made more than the airline. And so I was involved there in product marketing for a long time.
Now, pause for just a second.
Mm-hmm.
Being an entrepreneur like that over that big a division that's making a lot of money, you think, I know it's a while ago, but some of the listeners are in that mode. So what's that like? I mean, did you have to fight all the time? Were you taken for granted? What was it like?
We did fight all the time because we were a different business than the airline business.
Yes.
And, of course, in the beginning, we lost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So thankfully, Bob Crandall, our chairman, was very insightful about what automation could do and what he needed to do for distribution. So he provided air cover for that. But really, a lot of people on the airline thought it was a tremendous waste of money.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the union groups didn't like the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pretty scrappy fight, and that story is told again when we get to talking about Travelocity.
Mm-hmm. But the days of back in Sabre, did you have any learning that you want to offer some of the listeners? You know, like how often do you, pick your, what kind of battles do you pick? How often do you step up and scrawl? Do you threaten to leave? I mean, what do you think?
We were very lucky again that we had a chairman who really was protective of the business.
Mm-hmm.
But so we were very focused on something that people are focused on today, which is, how do you automate your distribution channel, and do you go direct or don't you go direct, and what are the issues as you deal with a distribution channel? And you're right, you had to be very careful about when you picked a battle and when you didn't,
sure.
and how much money you really went after.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, the company turned profitable fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we were making as much money as the airline, all those issues went away. We really didn't have to worry about it so much.
Making them the money helped.
Yeah.
All right, so did Sabre go public? Or did, you know,
yeah,
private?
What happened
did
was
spin off?
I actually moved just to finish up what I did. They actually sent me over to run 500 programmers, which I knew nothing about. And I spent about 4 years doing that, very instructive. And then I spent a couple or 3 years running computer operations at American, which was 2,000 people and a $600 million budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned an awful lot about tech, and then American decided to take Sabre public. And I was appointed chief information officer, went on the road show. We carved 20% of the company out and sold it to the public. So that was a very, very interesting journey, and it was a journey in which we had to take, I had to take the 2,000 people who worked for me, who were internal people servicing American Airlines, and suddenly say, no, American Airlines is now a customer, and we have to make a profit, and you have to treat them like a customer.
How many months did that take to sink in?
We spent an entire year of education to teach people who had said, hey, this is my other division, you know, and I kind of deal with them as a as another division, suddenly just say, I have to deal with them as a customer. I better be sweet and nice to them. I better treat them as best as I can. I have to understand that we're in this business to make money. That's a very hard concept to take a department that big, and we spent a lot of time in training, a lot of time with outside consultants, people who helped us teach these people how to do it.
A couple of my clients in the petroleum industry, where their engineering divisions or their innovation departments, you know, have to sell back services to the corporation and view them as an internal customer and charge them money and do the same kind of negotiations and compete with outside entities. Whoa! Some of them can't do it. They'll take 2, 3, 4 years to make that transition and never make it.
It's very hard, and a lot of resentment on the inside to say, well, why are these guys getting a markup?
Right.
And we actually did it. We started it a year before we went public in a sort of a practice mode because we knew we'd have all these issues. And then, of course, once we were public, we had to do it. You know, we had to have a markup and we had to be at arm's length from American, and you couldn't do special favors for American versus other clients. There was a lot to learn.
Now, did your role change during that process?
It did. What happened along the way was we'd had a product called Easy Saber, which was the very first online reservation system, and it was up on AOL and CompuServe. And the travel agent was over in the Saber division, and the travel agents, of course, hated this because they, looking long-term, said, this is going to come eat our lunch. We don't like this. So there was a lot of pressure to shut it down. It hadn't made any money, and my boss at the time was pretty insightful, and she said, well, how about I give that to Terry? He's chief information officer. We'll sort of hide it over there in IT, and nobody will know about it. We'll give it a black bag budget, and maybe the travel agents will forget about it because I don't want to kill it. So I kind of screwed up that plan because at that time the Internet was just deregulated. It was the first time you could actually have a business on the Internet because prior to that the Internet was owned by the government.
So what type of time frame are we talking about?
Year? 96.
Okay.
And
I knew mid-90s. But,
yeah, okay. 96. 95, it got deregulated. Amazon started and a couple others. And so we got together with another company, formed a little joint venture, came up with the name Travelocity, and put it on the Internet. We had about 12 people. And it was just one little department that was working for me. But I spent a lot of time on it because it was fascinating.
You could tell something was coming here.
It took off.
You knew you had a tiger.
Oh yeah, as soon as we got it going, and we had a press conference in New York, and boom, it took off. And after it just grew and grew. And
well, you know, look, what we'll do, we're going to take a break, and we're going to find out why did Travelocity take off, make money, grow, when you had a lot of competitors. And they couldn't make money. They couldn't pull it together. We got to look at that. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Amber. We'll be right back with Terry Jones, the founder of Travelocity.
Listen wherever you are. 24-hour business and financial news. Solid, focused, and informed. The leader in business talk. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONA. ALDONNA, thegrowthstrategist.com, achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
The defendant, having been found guilty, is sentenced to a term of 5 years imprisonment. Defendant will be remanded to custody immediately.
On June 4th, my big brother was sentenced to 5 years in prison for a gun crime. That day, he sentenced me to 5 years of walking home alone from school.
When you commit a gun crime, your family pays the price. Gun crimes hit home. A public service announcement brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
The challenge of change comes as ramped up due to the advent of information age and the interconnectedness of global community. In a high-tech world, the ability to embrace change, adapt, and respond accordingly is key to personal and professional success. Talking Change with Ann Powers, airing every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, explores the hows, whys, and what to do's when faced with change. Embrace the new reality. Adopt transition into your personal power portfolio and tune into Talking Change with Ann Powers every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
You're listening to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. If you would like to call into the show, dial toll free at 1-866-233-7861. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to The Growth Strategist. This is Aldana Ambler, and let me repeat the number. If you want to call in a question to Terry Jones, the founder of Travelocity, the number is 866-233-7529, and I'll screen the questions to make sure they fit what we're talking about, but I'd be happy to hear from you. All right, now, Terry, I think I want to know, why did you guys succeed in your mind, you know, when you had a lot of competitors?
Well, it was great management, of course.
Oh, I knew.
Just kidding. Well, I think, you know, we had a very strong parent, and that was very helpful in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. To be well-funded.
To be well-funded and also to be part of Sabre, who had a lot of relationships with all the airlines.
Yep.
On the other hand, later that became a liability. We can talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
It's a funny story. You know, we started out, one of the things we thought we might do, because we heard that Microsoft was going to enter the business, we tried to partner with them.
Ooh.
And we had very high-level discussions. I had discussions with both Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer,
mm-hmm.
and we tried very hard to do it. But we were basically two lions in a cage. American was a very aggressive, tough, smart company, and so was Microsoft. And we just couldn't work it out.
How many months did you try?
Oh, we tried for probably 6 months. And I think both companies wanted to do it. It's just that, you know, it was like a car with two steering wheels.
Now, what were some of the concepts of the partnership?
Well, obviously they would do technology and we would do marketing and the whole airline relationship, the hotels and cars, that's what we knew.
Yeah.
But we both wanted to be in charge, and joint ventures are extremely difficult. And in the end, they had some strong entrepreneurs themselves who said, mm-hmm. look, we can do this ourselves. We don't need those guys.
Yeah, they see themselves as marketing experts, too.
Yeah, and they went their own way with a company called Expedia,
mm-hmm.
which has been extremely successful. So that galvanized us right away to say.
Did you feel in the negotiations about the alliance that you taught them a lot?
Oh, I'm sure we did. I'm sure we did.
Because that's one of the risks I find with strategic alliances and joint ventures is, you know, how much do you tell?
Well, big risk, and particularly a little company with a big one,
because
a big company will happily drain your brain and take it and go create it, and it doesn't really matter what kind of non-disclosures you sign.
Yeah.
You know, their product will be, quote, inspired by you.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's a tough problem. We didn't just fall off the taco truck. I mean, we'd been around the block, and we knew how to negotiate, so we didn't give them too much.
Mm-hmm.
But they were also very smart, and Bill had wanted to be in travel for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of galvanized us to start very strongly.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things I think that we did to be successful, one of the very first things I did was pick up this group of 12 people and move them out of the corporate headquarters.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to get them
that
out of that mindset.
Oh, yeah.
I found a piece of space about a half a mile away that American had owned, and it was abandoned. It was empty. And so we moved in there. It was an old photo studio. So we had guys working
very
in dark rooms and stuff.
But
I wanted to change the culture. We still had a culture of suits and ties. We got rid of that immediately. Just said, look, I don't care about that. Let's go after the product.
Yep.
So actually location was important.
Physical surroundings really send a huge message to people.
They do. And and we had a ragtag bunch of people who kind of didn't fit in, who were over in this funny little business. And organizational structure was extremely important. We didn't make an internet committee. This business was a business, and it reported to me. And we got all the requisite people from the other departments transferred over there.
So you didn't have what some of the telecommunications companies call SPOCs, you know, S-P-O-C, the single point of contact. And it's like a 24-person committee. You didn't do that.
You know, the problem with that is everybody has allegiance to their home country if you do that. And they really don't have allegiance to the product. And we broke a lot of glass. We didn't use the PR firm. We didn't use the advertising firm.
Wow.
We tried different data processing stuff. And all the people on the outside said that didn't work, and I said, you don't know how to start a small business. You know, we got to do what works for us, not what works for you.
Now, how'd you know how to do it? Not to be irreverent, but...
I'd been in small business. Remember, I started in a small travel agency. I worked in a small computer company. I knew that Sabre...
And you supervised the programmers.
Yeah, and Sabre didn't know anything about consumer products. We were business to business. So I had to go get an advertising agency that understood consumers.
What was your biggest mistake back then?
Oh.
Any big thing not work?
Sure, lots of products didn't work. But I think, you know, I probably in the beginning didn't spend enough of my time running air cover for the company. In the end, that's what I spent a lot of my time doing, was being the buffer that sort of pushed away the corporation and got rid of their bureaucracy, because we just couldn't put up with the costs and we couldn't put up with the weight.
That's not a fun job.
No, it wasn't. And, in fact... much later, when the company was taken private, that's really why I left, because I didn't want to go through that again. I didn't want to go work for them again. But organizationally, it was important that we were separate, and it was also important that I reported as the president of this division to the CEO. Because...
Oh, that's a battle worth fighting.
The two of us had enough juice that he could cover me. And we were losing $20 million bucks a year. And everybody else wanted that money.
Picky.
You know, but he looked at it as R&D. So the funding part of this, again, was very high level. And I think if you, if you're a large corporation, you're going to start something, you have to say, look, this is the funding for this, and the rest of you guys can't have it. And they're going to be separate, and they're going to break some glass, and that's okay. And we'll see if they succeed or they don't. Eventually.
Some of the people who are listening, they do it from the venture capital viewpoint, and it's the same feeling. That, you know, you get $20 million or $30 million in seed money for this kind of thing. You can't have somebody quibbling about, you know, well, maybe we should take it back.
Well, that's right. I mean, I'm a venture capitalist now. I'm part of a VC firm, and I'm also on boards of many private companies. And
you don't have to do it.
Well, and one of the things that we didn't get that VCs provide is the kind of counseling about how to nurture a small company. You know, we had to fight for it.
You just had, you know, the big behemoth watching over your shoulder saying, when? Okay, come on.
Yeah, so you get, I mean, it was pretty easy to get money. I didn't have to do a roadshow, but it came with a lot of luggage.
Now, early on, a lot of your success came from strategic alliances and joint ventures that did work, like AOL and Yahoo. What was that like? What was the deal?
Well, one of the reasons we did that is we had good intelligence that Microsoft was going to build Expedia into the browser. So if Expedia was part of every single desktop shipped in the United States, we were basically toast. We just didn't know how we'd succeed.
It sounds like a lawsuit might be involved.
Yeah, exactly, which thankfully helped that. So we said we better go do deals, and we did deals with Netscape, which was big at the time, and with Yahoo and with AOL. And those, you know, lots of people were doing those kinds of deals where you paid for real estate. We had a $200 million deal, five-year deal with AOL, for example, where we paid them for real estate. But what we did was a little different than other people. We said, okay, you can have half our commissions for the tickets, but we get half of your advertising revenue in the channel. And by doing that, neither of us really cared whether somebody bought a ticket or went through an ad to go direct to an airline.
Right. You both won anyway, so it's a win-win deal.
It was a win-win deal or a lose-lose deal, depending on what happened.
Yep.
And we overnight increased travel there about 40%. It was a profitable deal for us, unlike the famous Dr. Coop or some of those deals that were just air. But it was tough. AOL is the toughest company I've ever negotiated with.
Tougher now with the affiliation with Time or less? Or
no, I think they're the new team there. We actually have a deal with them with the new company I'm chairman of, Kayak, great travel company. Your guys here should look at it. I hope the listeners take a look at kayak.com.
Spelled K-A-Y-A-K.
Yep. And it's a little different kind of travel site.
Okay.
So AOL in those days, you know, was extremely successful. They had the real estate, and you know, every morning you'd come in to negotiate, and the stuff you thought you won yesterday was gone. You'd start over again.
Mm-hmm.
They were extremely tough, but we managed to pull that off. We had a similar deal with Yahoo. Travelocity is still on both those websites, and you know, those kind of ventures. The best kind of venture you can have, which really happened with Yahoo, is you do the deal, you negotiate the contract for 2.5 months, and then you never open the contract again.
I was just going to ask, did you have people who were assigned to just babysit AOL and Yahoo?
At full-time. Two full-time people for each account. That's all they did. And it took us a long time to convince both AOL and Yahoo that we knew more about travel than they did. When we did that, we succeeded. With other companies like At Home, which later became Excite, we never did convince them, and they never made any money.
So what did you do? Did you do seminars, dog and pony shows?
Yeah, we were there.
We'd sit down
with them. We would show them other people's figures disguised and say, well, look, you know, we do business with some other portals, and here's how much business they're getting because they're listening, you know, because we know about travel. Joint ventures are hard because you've got disparate cultures coming together. And you've got to understand the other person's culture. You've got to spend enough time with them so you understand their motivations and then use your own leverage to get what you want within their motivations.
Now, were they some of the reason that you grew, as, you know, to $300 million?
Oh, absolutely. They were a great accelerator for us. Plus, you know, we did an awful lot on our own.
Right.
I spent an awful lot of my own time on public relations.
Yeah, but wasn't 40% of the business tied up in the AOL Yahoo kind of deals?
Right, but 60% wasn't, and you know, we had to build a brand without a lot of money, and
somebody, even a dealer or a customer or whatever, has that much, sometimes it feels like they've made the acquisition of you, you know, because they know. It's like they didn't pay for you, but they own you. You never felt like that?
You know, as we talked on the break, and I've advised many companies since then, you have to be extremely careful.
Yeah.
In doing a deal like that, I would not do a deal that tied up 40% of my distribution with two customers again. I mean,
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. We had no choice. We were fighting Microsoft. So it wasn't the wrong decision at the moment.
Right.
The problem is when you get to renewal time, we were then a public company. Eventually, I took Travelocity public. Once you're a public company and 40% of your revenue comes from two guys, you can't lose them.
Yeah.
I mean, your stock will crash and it'll never come back. So then they really have you in a vice.
And there wasn't any way to grow dynamic enough for them to be in a smaller proportion?
Well, the Internet was growing so fast that you know, the whole thing was growing. By the time I left, we had $3.5 billion of travel sales.
Yeah.
You know, they produced $300 million in revenue, as you said, profitable.
Yeah.
So
now, after the break, we're going to talk about your IPO.
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back with Terry Jones of Travelocity and some other ventures that he's doing now. We'll give you a hint on where he's doing now. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler.
Fresh, dynamic, and totally prepared for continuing business education. Business Talk Radio. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDANA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
I know. Being a college freshman is supposed to be tough. But let me tell you about my schedule this semester. All 18 credits. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I have American Lit at 8.05 a.m. And then I only have 15 minutes to get to my 9:15 Ethics and Value Theory class all the way across campus. Then in the afternoon, Calculus 1. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have two lectures that go through lunch. Sociology of Families, then Intro to Microbiology. Pre-med. And finally, I have a double lab that ends around 9 p.m. Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you.
If a kid will do whatever it takes to get through college, what will you do to send her there? Please support the United Negro College Fund and call 1-800-332-UNCF, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Tune into Small Business Trends Radio with Anita Campbell every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Each week, Anita and expert guests provide a big picture view of the small business market, identifying the trends and major events driving the robust growth of the small business market. Whether you are a small business owner or a company of any size desiring to sell small businesses or reach the small business market with a product or service, Small Business Trends Radio is your resource for trends that influence the global small business market. Right here on the Bottom Line for Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Well, welcome back to The Growth Strategist. This is Aldana Ambler, and I'm noticing today that a number of our guests are in new countries that we haven't been reaching in a while. So, Terry, you've reached a much more global span for us today. Good for you.
Now, well, where are some of these people coming from?
Yeah, we have more South America and we have more Southeast Asia than normal.
Oh, well, great.
Pretty cool. So I want to make sure I get the time frame straight. You know, the time that you were negotiating with Microsoft and AOL and Yahoo, that's mid-90s, right?
Well, actually, Microsoft was in the 90s, but we really negotiated with AOL when we went public. We went public in 2000.
Okay.
I misspoke during the break. We went public in 2000. So,
okay.
And one of the way, well, the way we did that was actually to buy a public company in a reverse merger. That company had a contract with AOL.
Okay, explain that one. I love reverse merger. Okay.
Well, a reverse merger means you're a private company, you buy a public company, mm-hmm. and become public yourself.
Yep.
And we did that with a very, very complicated structure that came out of the Goldman Sachs laboratory. I didn't even know they had a laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that acquisition, this company had a deal with AOL. We recut the deal. Gave AOL some stock, and that's how we got that deal. And simultaneously, the same week, did the Yahoo deal and went public.
Now, did you think you were going to do that, or did the Goldman Sachs people approach you and say, "I got an approach for you"? How did that happen?
No, we were negotiating with Preview for some time, and we just mm-hmm. didn't know how to structure it correctly
mm-hmm.
to maintain a tax free status because we wanted to spend tax free, and so that's always difficult. And
mm-hmm.
Sabre actually went public. Fully public, 100% public in the same week. So it was a pretty
wow.
heavy time when, you know, it was very frothy, a lot of stuff going on in the market. And, you know, the roadshow was very, very interesting. We unfortunately went public at one of the highest days of the NASDAQ ever had.
Well, you're talking before 9/11 of 2001.
Oh, yeah, before all that stuff. So
what made it crazy? I mean, remind people what 2000
well,
was like.
Well, you know, every you could take almost anything public at that period.
Mm-hmm.
Analysts, anything that had the word internet in it was mm-hmm. going to be great.
And even there was a little bit of doubt, but nobody was wanting to admit it.
No, nobody wanted to admit it. And what was interesting was even once we went public, mm-hmm. travel was not the darling.
Mm-hmm.
We would be in the back of the room, and the guys like Pets.com and the dog yeah. food guys and other people would be in the front, and nobody thought travel was going to be big.
Mm-hmm.
Travel, of course, now is larger on the Internet than the next four categories of e-commerce combined. So people didn't understand that. Eventually they did, and, of course, ourselves and Expedia, who were the two largest public companies, and then eventually Orbitz, who became a large competitor, also was public.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've all done very, very well,
mm-hmm.
All had a tough time through the crash of the NASDAQ and 9/11. And they subsequently come back. So,
do you remember what that whole process cost you? I mean, I know that sounds nuts, but some people, when they're growing like this, they can't even imagine the number of man hours and.
Yeah, it's immensely expensive, but if the IPO works, it all gets mm-hmm. paid off because
sure.
you get so much money from the IPO. So it's not the expense, but today things are very different. Because now you've got Sarbanes,
right?
And I serve on several public boards, and I mm-hmm. serve on some boards of companies who have contemplated going public,
mm-hmm.
and it's a much tougher decision now because
the cost of
being public, not going mm-hmm. public, but being public,
mm-hmm.
and conforming to all those rules and spending mm-hmm. all the time with an expensive board,
mm-hmm.
Spending all the time with very expensive auditors, it's a tough decision. And
oh, it's even changed the marketing for the large accounting companies, because they have their hands full handling their publicly held clients. They don't even go after the privately held mid-sized companies anywhere near like they did.
No, and right now the Sarbanes bill is almost as big as the audit bill.
Uh-huh.
So you've got to be sure that your stock's going to go somewhere. I was
mm-hmm.
on the board of a company that had been public. Mm-hmm. Stock was as high as 60, went down to about 5, and has stayed there forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a depressing place to be. You'd be better off
mm-hmm.
being private.
Okay.
So
you have to be at a pretty large scale and very optimistic to do what you did.
Extremely
if you were
optimistic.
Now. Yeah.
Then it was a different story. You could take
mm-hmm.
almost anything public, and people.
But one of your secrets is your timing, huh?
Yeah, timing was very important.
Yeah.
We needed to do it. But the interesting thing that happened was when you're public,
mm-hmm.
you must run the company for the public shareholders. Even though we were 70% still owned by Sabre, we only took 30% of the company public. You've got to do what you think is right. And
yeah.
the airlines all wanted to use Travelocity as a hammer to beat up on Sabre.
Mm.
So Sabre makes its money every time a travel agent makes a reservation.
Mm-hmm.
And the airlines were saying, hey, Travelocity, why don't you wire up to us directly and go around Sabre, your parent?
Oh, whoa.
Well, that was a pretty difficult idea for Sabre to swallow.
Whoa.
But Expedia didn't care. They would do it. Orbitz was doing it. Sabre looked at that and said, we can't have this happen. We want to take you private. So one day I got a letter thrown over the transom that said, form a special committee, begin negotiating with us, we're going to take you back.
No kidding.
And that was a...
I don't think most people know that happened.
That was a pretty crazy thing because...
When did that happen?
That happened in 2002. Sabre decided that...
After all that money to go public, you turned...
Yep.
They
turned around and bought the company back. And under the FCC rules, I couldn't even talk to my chairman. You know, I was independent. So we spent 3 months trying to negotiate a good price for the shareholders. We think we got a good price. They paid about a 30% premium on the stock. They took the company private, and that's when I left, because I simply didn't want to go back and fight all those old battles all
over.
Well,
one of my questions I was going to ask you is, when did you leave and what prompted it? Well, there you go.
Well, there are two things. The other thing that happened, which was quite strange, actually, was in order to cash out and get their stock payments,
mm-hmm.
The agreements required the executives to leave. It's normal double trigger kind of thing where you have.
So that's why you had, you know, the 10 people exodus.
Well, but it's kind of crazy. We said to Sabre, look, do you really want all the executives that run this place to leave? And they said, well, gosh, we don't really want to make you rich and have you stay here. Everybody else would be jealous.
Yeah.
And we said, but we know where the gas pedal is. Do you
yeah.
really want to do this? And they did. So all 10 top executives walked out the door. Travelocity turned from a profitable company to an unprofitable one.
Pretty quickly?
Fairly quickly. The bureaucracy came in. It was difficult. They went through They now have a second president after me who was a wonderful executive. She's turned the company around.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've met Michelle.
Michelle
Bright.
Brighter
than bright, yeah, brighter than bright.
Very great. She came through an acquisition, a company that I bought while I was there.
Yeah.
And now they're doing fine. But to go...
But what was it, 2002 to maybe 2004?
Yeah.
Somewhere in
there?
Yeah,
and now they're
at
$6 billion in sales. They're doing great. But it was that wrenching change again to go from public to private. From, you know, we were in this very cool building that was very trendy, and we had our own culture, and bang, they got absorbed back in the corporate headquarters into the gray cubes.
But a $6 billion, privately held company.
Yeah, now they're $6 billion. Well, they're part of a very large public company, which is Sabre. But, you know, $6 billion in travel sales, they'll do, I think, I don't have their profitability numbers in front of me, but probably way double what we were doing then in revenue, $600 million probably. They're international. They're doing very well. So it was, you know, from 12...
I like the new thing they're doing with the Wizard.
Mm-hmm. With the...
I remember saying it right.
Right.
And
right. The Gnome.
Yeah, the Gnome.
The Gnome.
Oh, I didn't say it right. The Gnome.
That's well, the
really
thing
cool
that's good about,
campaign.
I think, you know, whether you like the campaign of the Roaming Gnome or not...
Mm-hmm.
Is that they have fully integrated it into television, into radio, into print, and on the
website.
It didn't
go halfway. Exactly right.
And a lot of companies make the mistake of not integrating their brand into the website.
Yep.
And, you know, the web is about, these days, particularly about trust. You've got to trust this company because everybody looks the same. There is no bad part of town. On the web, maybe there's an X-rated part of town. But
I was going to say, I don't know, the porno sites might
Yeah, but there
that.
Isn't really, I mean, you go from business A to business B to business C, and they all look the same, and you don't realize that one is just Larry, and one is a billion-dollar company.
Yeah, that's true.
So by integrating your brand successfully on the web, you can engender trust, and that gets you more sales.
Yeah. So, boy, you left because you thought you could see what was going to happen next? Or?
Yeah, I just didn't want to be part of it again and fight all those battles and start it all over. And I said, you know, I can.
But the Twitch will go away any time now. Now, walk me through the changes in your executive team because you were there, what, 10 years?
Well, Travelocity started in 96. I left in 2002. So it's like 6 years. But,
all right, 6 years. But from what I understand, your executive team had to go through some changes.
Yeah, it wasn't only the executive team. What we found was those original 12 or 15 people that were there when we started really didn't like the company as it grew. They liked being a company of 12 people.
Yeah.
We also brought over some corporate types who couldn't stand the pace that we'd work on a project for 2 months and throw it away if it didn't work. You know, they were used to working on projects for years. So one of the things that I think is key when you start any small business in a existing market, we mixed a whole bunch of orange hair, earring set, blow up the world revolutionary kids with a bunch of cigar smoking, tie wearing corporate types who knew the industry.
Yeah.
And they had a real catfight.
Oh, I bet.
And out of that catfight, that crucible, came a really good business.
Yeah.
Because there were so many web businesses that were just full of revolutionaries.
Yep.
They didn't know what to do.
And I like the ones in the middle. And being a rapidly growing company, that's not easy. There's a whole rhythm that goes with being rapid.
Growth is tough.
Yeah. Well, we're going to come back after the break. We're going to talk about how do you manage rapid growth. This is Aldana Amber, the Growth Strategist. We'll be right back with Terry Jones.
When business is in your blood and you need answers, get connected. Call 1-866-233-7861.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ELDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
The challenge of change comes as ramped up due to the advent of information age and the interconnectedness of the global community. In a high-tech world, the ability to embrace change, adapt, and respond accordingly is key to personal and professional success. Talking Change with Ann Powers, airing every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, explores the hows, whys, and what to do's when faced with change. Embrace the new reality. Adopt transition into your personal power portfolio and tune into Talking Change with Ann Powers every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
You're listening to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. If you would like to call into the show, dial toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Well, welcome back to The Growth Strategist. This is Aldana Ambler, and we have Terry Jones, who is the founder of Travelocity. And on to bigger and better things nowadays. We'll talk about that in a second. But we have a quick question from a caller. Can we take the caller?
Yes. I would like to know what suggestions you have for small businesses who are emerging entrepreneurs, those who may not be targeted toward becoming a public company but just want to have a very successful small business.
Well, I guess I'd say, having just started another company, a new travel company, it's kind of an old saw, but there's nothing more important than the team. I watched this new company start, and I thought they were spending way too much time selecting absolutely the best people, and we spent a long time at it, and what's happened is that this company has just grown like a rocket. These mm-hmm. people work very well together, and you know, at Travelocity, we turned the team over a bunch of times as we grew. I think you have to do that as well, because there are different people who are starters than there are growers than there are runners. But even in starting, don't accept anything less than the best. And if you can get people who've been involved in startups before to help you or to be your employees, I think that's the most important thing, because you probably are starting because you know your product, you have a great idea, but that's only part of it. Of course, now you've got to produce it, you've got to account for it, you've got to market it, you've got to get your PR, you've got to do all those other things, and if you can get real experts, you know, who can help you, and as always, everybody says, hire people who are smarter than you, boy, that's what you got to do. Particularly in their area. So understand what your strengths are, hire complementary people, and absolutely the best you can get.
And I would agree, because I find people get plateaus really early in the development of their businesses because they've hired what I call cheap and loyal, those being the two attributes that they value, and they cut corners on the people that they're working with. Sometimes that means relatives, and no offense to family businesses, but you really need to be selective about which people you're working with. And one of the things that happens with a family business is they will tell you what you want to hear, or they'll tell you in a way you can't hear it. And so it's really important for, you know, if you are growth oriented, you may not necessarily want to be going to the point of being an IPO. But if you want to make money and you want to not just have the business own you, having real confidence around you so that you're complementary and you can take off really matters. Fine, thank you for the call. That's great.
Thank you.
I think one of the things that we need to focus on is this executive team. I mean, Terry, you went through this change in the group. Did it go more towards the gray hairs or more towards the revolutionaries? How did it?
Well, I think we ended up in an interesting place. I mean, one of the things I did when we went public was to search for a CFO who was more of a gray hair. My CFO had been the CFO at Pan American Airways, at Blue Cross Blue Shield, at two or three other public companies. Really was well known on Wall Street. I thought that was exceptionally important. Whereas my marketing guy was sort of a young, brash, internet-type marketing person because that's what we needed.
Yep.
My IT person came out of Sabre, long experience with high-volume transactions, later went on to become CIO at PayPal.
Yep.
And Gateway Computing. So I think, you know, we had a wide range of people, but the people who were there early, most of them simply couldn't grow into a business that was growing that fast. I was lucky because I started in a small business. I'd been involved in small businesses. Then I worked 20 years at American Airlines, was eventually an officer there. So I'd been in little and big. So it wasn't so hard for me to change, but for a lot of people.
But in your definition of a small business is different from a lot of people, too. We're not talking micro.
Well, I started a travel agency that was there was three people. We moved in a taxi cab to our first office with only a typewriter.
Yep.
So I've been
in little businesses. That's true. That's
micro. You know, we grew that to a $5 million travel agency. So I've been in both little and big, but a lot of people haven't. And I think that's, you know, where you get the founder who can't grow, and venture capitals will step in and say, you know, why don't you become chairman, because you really can't run this anymore. And the best thing you can do, if you believe it, is take the money and do that if you understand you can't grow.
And if the listeners are interested in a book that really is good, I think, about this journey, is if you haven't read Corporate Life Cycles by Ishaq Odyssey, that's a good one that complements what Terry's talking about. I mean, just, you know, these phases that companies go through. I'd like you to comment a little bit, if you could, about the investment in technology. I mean, you had to do it, clearly, given the business you're in. But think out loud a little bit about how that kind of drives the growth of companies and how important that is.
Well, it's so different now than it was then. I think looking at technology today, what's wonderful about it is you can do so much on the web, and you don't have to make the kind of investments we made years ago in Sabre, where, you know, I had a $600 million IT budget. But I think today you really need people around you who understand technology and who can help you present your product on the Internet. Technology today is much less about gee whiz and much more about marketing.
People don't even want pop-ups and flash. They just want, you know, they want the information and they demand it.
They want it as fast as they can get it. And there's no good being innovative in your user interface. Nobody wants the gas pedal on the left. You know, everybody knows how Internet sites work. And what's interesting now is if you're a chief information officer in a big company, today you may have come from marketing because those two disciplines are right together. I was very lucky in that I was in technology, I've been in retail, and I've been in marketing. And those are departments in big companies that don't play well together. And if you're a small business person these days, you really have to say, I better understand technology, or I better have somebody in my shop, maybe it's a younger person, who really gets it and who understands this generation that's running out of college today who lives with technology, because I'm going to have to present my product that way. I'm going to have to get how search marketing works. I mean, I was on the board of Overture that invented search marketing. We sold our company to Yahoo. You know, if you don't get Yahoo and Google these days, you're not going to sell your product.
Well, you're probably in your 80s or 90s.
Well, but
now, what are you doing now?
What am I doing now? Well, a bunch of things. I'm a professional speaker. I speak to people about electronic marketing and e-commerce and travel, so I do that. I have a consulting company called Essential Ideas, and we consult with travel companies about digital marketing and really how to present travel online. A lot of physical companies who still, you know, need to understand it.
And you're on a couple boards.
I'm a board member at Earthlink, at La Quinta, and Vendari Media. I'm chairman of a new company called Kayak, which is a new travel company. And I'm part of a venture capital firm, General Catalyst, in Boston. And we actually invested and started Kayak, and we look at other travel-related investments. I do travel for them. They do lots of things.
Now, well, you'd know what to look for.
Yeah, exactly. So
now, if somebody wanted to contact you, what's the best way?
It's just Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, at tbjones.com. Terry at tbjones.com is the best way to get me because I'm pretty virtual.
Is that T as in, you know, TB, like I'm in your name?
Yep, like
T-B
Terry.
Jones. Okay, TB Jones.
T as in Tom, T as in Terry, B as in Boy, Jones.com.
Gotcha.
And I'm happy to talk to people. And, you know, I'm always looking for new ideas. I'm on a couple of private company boards as well. And
I've already asked Terry to watch for some of the boards that I should be helping with because the networking with various people that you meet is just really important. Really important. Well, you know what, Terry, you've just been wonderful. We're probably going to want you on the show again.
Sure.
This is an important journey. I think there's subtleties in how you word things that you're being very instructive to folks, you know, in a very painless way. So I want to foreshadow some of the shows coming up. Next week, we have one of my favorite people on. Mike Morales is the CEO of Dimensional Healthcare. And these guys do late-stage research, you know, like clinical trials for pharmaceutical companies. Very competitive industry. You know, how do you compete with 60 competitors and have a sales cycle of like 18 months and come out on the top? And he's going through another version of what Terry's talking about, the journey from being president to CEO, hard driving a company to 50 million. And he's living the journey that we're talking about. We're just going to step back from where Terry's been and say, what's it like from, you know, from that 20 million to 50 million zone? In 2 weeks, on the 31st of January, we have Robert Cook of Stops, and we're going to be looking at the introduction of new products and services to an existing market. What they've been really good at is transportation and healthcare, et cetera. And Lynn Katzman's going to be on the program on February 7th. She builds buildings for senior care, assisted living, and the idea of the real estate and the acquisitions and such, just really brilliant in the multiple locations. I think they're up to like 16, 17 locations. Really good lineup here from people from all across the country. Give me a call. Check out my website. It's aldana@ambler.com or 1-888-ALDANA. And have a good week growing your businesses. Always good to hear from you. This is Aldana Ambler signing out.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on and tuning into The Growth Strategist. Join us each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another exciting episode of The Growth Strategist, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.